This is Carmen DeFalco on ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports. Thanks for listening to the Carmen and Yurko podcast, presented by Coors Light. Stay inside and buy your Coors Light online. Find out how at get.coorslight.com. Coors Light, take time to chill.
Cap. This is Cap and Company on ESPN 1000.
Chicago's home for sports.
Follow at the Capman on Twitter.
Hey, Crosstalk brought to you by the Hawthorne Racecourse, with sports betting on lockdown. Fans are returning to America's original sport. I was on it on Friday and Saturday. I wasn't very good. Horse racing. Download the Club Hawthorne app. Wager on races from around the world at clubhawthorneapp.com. Our Last Dance Monday, presented by Coors Light. And we're always on Twitch at ESPN 1000 Chicago is our Twitch channel. Thank you, Danny. Thank you, Chris. We're back tomorrow. We'll talk more about this. We will talk baseball. Are they going to get baseball back? We might have a little more clarity this week, so we will see where we're at. Carmen Yurk, join me now. Hello, gentlemen. How are you?
Hey now. What's
Hello.
Up?
Hello.
Hello.
How you doing?
Very well.
How are you?
Very good. Very good. Excited to have watched last night. Just wish there were five more weeks.
Five more. 5 weeks went by fast.
Flew.
Boom, 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 boom. That helped, though, right?
So great. So great. How about Michael telling Larry Bird?
I love it.
I love yourself. It. Hey, you got time to work on that
it
golf
was game. Fabulous.
It was so great.
That was very, very good.
Yeah.
The trash talk. You know what else? The clothes. The bagginess of the clothes back then.
Yep.
You could put two of Michael in each of those suits. I mean, my God, has the fashion changed, you know? Even from 10 years ago, I guess. But everything looks so big. The double-breasted suits and the—I mean, like it's crazy that those suits are swimming. And Michael probably spends $5,000 a piece on those suits. He's swimming in those things. Scotty and all of them—it's like wow. Now they don't even wear suits to the games anymore.
No, Michael.
But if
always
they did,
said,
it's nice and form-fitted.
No, Michael always said shorts. It yeah. was a business trip, and that's right. why he dressed the way he did.
Different time, different mentality, a little bit. Yeah, but
well,
they all
I mean,
wore
they do
suits.
Get dressed up. It's like a fashion show. Only right. the way they dress is kind of goofy.
Exactly.
Wearing a suit with shorts. You right. know? Oh, great! Look at you,
capri
you
pants.
You look fantastic. With, aren't you
the,
bright
with the sport coat on.
You Don't look, you yeah. look classy?
It's very weird.
Yeah. But you know what? It's the style nowadays. So
yeah,
they're probably in the 80s saying people look like goofballs compared to the
you,
way they York, dressed
when
in
you
the
played,
60s.
Did Coughlin or any of your coaches, for that matter, make you guys have a dress code?
Only Coughlin did. Coughlin made you wear a suit.
Figures.
So you get on the charter jet and have to wear a suit and then get your ass kicked for 3 hours and have to wear a suit back?
Yeah. Hey, that's the way it happens, yes. That's Jeez. The way they wanted to do it.
Why do you so think Yurko's got all those sport coats in his basement?
It's everything like, downstairs. I never threw a thing away. I still have jackets from 1996 down there.
He does.
Remember, what goes out of style comes back into style, guys.
It's like walking into the restaurant in Goodfellas where he's just got lines of, you know, he's got yeah. coat racks full of suits and coats.
The shirts need to get replaced, though, over the course of time. The shirts need to be replaced.
Yeah, that's true.
So, and because of the you know size of the legs that we used to have when we played, because you could squat a ton of weight, the pants were always a little bit oversized, so they gave you more room in the thigh.
Mm-hmm.
Now they would be just ridiculous. If I wore a pair of those, it would be ridiculous.
I'd love
like,
to
what,
see
what
it.
Do you look like a clown. That's what you'd look like in those. So. Yeah, smartly enough, you know, you really can't wear those. I keep them just for like whatever, you know, I want to take a look at them. But they were all custom fit, so, you know, even if you donate them, who's going to wear them?
I don't know. Well, somebody will take
Nobody.
Them.
Nobody's going to wear them.
When I was coaching, they had fired the football coach at Northern, but they made him an associate AD. But he was impeccably dressed. Impeccably dressed. A guy named Jerry Ippoliti. He was sartorial splendor. Our head coach, the late John McDougal, my second father, he was not a man of sartorial splendor.
No.
There's like 10 guys standing outside the basketball office one day. Coach McDougal's wearing some, you know, green blade. I mean, just, it didn't work. Here comes the football coach. And he goes, hey, John, how's it going? Hey, you hang on to that coat. It may come back in style in 15 or 20 years. McDougal just turned him. And there's like 10 people there. He goes, you know, Jerry, if you worried less about your clothes, more about your coaching, you might still be the football coach here. And that guy took off. It was one of the best birds I've ever seen.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
So when Yurko said, wait, things will come back in style, it reminded me of that story.
I think Yurko's kind of right, though. It's cyclical. It all comes back at some point, you know? So just keep hanging on. Maybe those big suits will come back someday. I can't imagine. Danny's saying no way. I don't know, Danny. 20 years from now, who knows? I mean, it is crazy to watch them put those suits on. You never know.
Have you seen, like, what fashion is for, like, pop stars and people, like Billie Eilish? Like, have you seen what she's wearing?
Not really.
Like those Fila Dino Stomper shoes that, like, in the 90s were so cool,
right?
And they're hideous.
It all comes back,
Yurko,
man.
You might be in vogue in, like, 5 years. You might have to bust those suits out.
Wait till I do, man. It'll be cutting-edge stuff.
Alex Kennedy with a great story from Hoops Hype. In 1999, Randy Brown on the phone with a retired Michael Jordan when rookie Corey Benjamin said, I could beat MJ one-on-one. Weeks later, MJ saw Corey at a game, made him say it to his face. MJ showed up at the Bulls' next practice and beat him and then said, look around you. You see six championship banners? You didn't have anything to do with those, and don't call me out of retirement again.
He didn't just beat him. Yeah, I've heard that story many times before.
Destroyed him.
Yeah, he destroyed him. The best line is, who is it? The former wide receiver that does the great Dennis Rodman. Is it Andrew Hawkins? Is that who's doing it? I think that's his name, right? I don't know if you guys have seen those. He's been quite good, actually, quite entertaining doing these recaps. He's very funny. He does these impersonations of everybody. He does a great Rodman. But he's come up with the line for Jordan, like the standard line as he's spoofing it is, anybody that gets on Michael's bad side, you know, he says, I'm a busty ass, I'm going to give you 60. That's the and it's hilarious every time he says it. And, like, that was what it was that day to Corey Benjamin. Like, you dare talk trash about me, to me, watch out. Because I'm coming for you. You're on the list. That's it. I loved Reggie Miller's story last night from when he was a rookie. That was very good. Ever talk that way to Black Jesus again.
I never called him Michael Jordan
fabulous.
Again.
Yeah, it's really, really great. He's going to bust your ass and he's going to give you 60. And that's it.
Wait, here you go.
Early in my career, we were playing against Chicago. And you're going to go 110% because you're trying to impress your vets on your team.
Miller around a Stepanovich screen, turns a corner down the lane, lays it in, foul called. Reggie Miller scores.
In the first half, I played well, and I was riled up. And MJ didn't shoot the ball particularly great, so I was like, yeah, you're Michael Jordan, the guy that walks on water, you know? He looks at me.
Michael Jordan at the foul line, comes up shooting, good.
Second half, I had like 2 points. He ended up with a lot more.
Back out to Jordan, Michael, lean in, shot 13-footer, good.
And I remember him walking off the court. He was like, don't ever talk trash to Black Jesus. And that's when I stopped referring to him as Michael Jordan. And I always refer to him either as Jordan, Black Jesus, or that black cat. I never called him Michael Jordan again after that.
That's a pretty great story.
So great.
Yeah. Don't mess with Black Jesus now. All right.
So great.
I enjoyed watching the early parts of episode 9 last night, really focusing on, the beginning and the end, I guess, of that episode, the way they did the timelines and all these. But that 98 series was something, man. That 98 conference final series against that team. And Reggie Miller sort of talked about at the beginning about how good they were. They really were a good, deep team. You know, you had a couple future Hall of Famers on that team. Chris Mullin was more towards the end of his career, but you had a couple of future Hall of Famers, and Jalen was very good, and Travis Best was a good, bench player. The Davis boys. I mean, and Rick Smits. Like, they really were a good physical team, and that series, like, part of me has always got, the fan in me always has a little pessimism, you know, but I can remember more than one occasion in that series feeling like, man, is this going to be it? Are they just spent? Can they beat this Indiana team? I'm glad they spent some time on game 4 because I'll never forget how irate I was when Reggie Miller got away with that push and he hit that shot. And we all hated Reggie Miller so much. And I've really grown to enjoy Reggie Miller. I think he's a good broadcaster and I respect his work ethic. And he really wasn't afraid of anybody, which I can appreciate and respect. But boy, did I hate him. And watching him get away with that push and make that shot, I mean, when we were young in the moment, like,
but
oh,
if
my God,
did,
my blood was boiling.
Right.
I hated him
but
so
if
much.
Michael pulled that move?
Same thing.
Yeah.
Of course. I know. And I'll never, like, I can still to this day, it's 22 years ago, And I was so young, but I can just remember, like, how upset and angry I was. And I was like, that effing Reggie Miller, I hate him. I hate that. And I wasn't like 15 anymore. You know, I was like 20 years old, 21 years old. And I'm like, oh, Reggie Miller, you SOB.
The best story that he told, other than that one, is in I think it's in Winning Time, I saw it, where his dad doesn't go to his game. He goes to watch Cheryl Miller play.
Oh, man.
And Reggie gets in the car and they go, how'd you do? Oh, we won. How'd you play? I had like 25 or 30. I had a big game. How'd you do, Cheryl? I had 105.
100, yeah.
105.
Talk about domination.
He's like, oh, I guess.
Yeah, it's.
I guess I need to stop talking.
That 98 series was something. And only the second time they ever had to go to a game seven, which is sort of remarkable in its own right when you think about it, but.
I also found it interesting, I don't know if you guys agree, when he says that they hand Michael the iPad, this is Reinsdorf on how it broke up. He goes, Jerry?
No, he said, I want to show you Jerry, and he said, Reinsdorf?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He goes, I want to hear this.
Yes.
Yeah. Pretty interesting.
It was?
I did not know he had called Phil, and in Ramona's article that she published today, he gives the date, like July 3rd. 3rd.
Yeah.
I called him and said, let's run this back.
Yeah.
Come back.
And then Ramona's article says, Jerry told Michael, just don't do anything definitive yet. Just let me see if I can talk Phil
into coming back.
Into coming back one more year. There was some really good stuff at the end. I mean, Scotty, go ahead, Jerry.
They put Phil in a no-win situation there. They said no matter what, if you go 82-0, yeah, and that's your mindset the whole year, then at the end of it, the guy, Reinsdorf, the guy that wouldn't stand up to Krause, that wouldn't tell him, hey, listen, shut your mouth and go sit in the corner. I'm going to handle the business the way it needs to be handled. You let Krause say it. You let him go out publicly and tell everybody. You've got a theme for the year. Then all of a sudden, in the 11th hour, at 11:59, one stroke before midnight, you know, Reinsdorf's got the nads to go up to Phil and say, never mind everything that was said. Because you won, I guess I've got to go and put this out there. That's horse crap, and that's a terrible way of doing business.
And I mean, the other thing was Phil was going, he was on the verge of getting divorced.
Right.
And so he took that year to try and at least try and repair his marriage. It didn't happen, and then he started dating
Jeannie
Buss.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, that quote, obviously, that quote sunk. You're kind of right, York. Like that. It probably should have never have been said by Jerry Krause. That quote set the stage for the tenor and the tone of the whole year.
Organizations?
No, he goes 82-0. I mean, like that should have never been said.
This will be his last year. That's what he came out. He said, yes. Nobody's, there's no backstabbing. There's no this. There's no that. This will be his final year, period.
Yeah,
that's
I remember getting the call at the radio station down the dial, and it was him returning a call, Jerry Krause. And I said, hey, can you tape something? Sure. It's a great day, Jerry. You got the number one coach in the league re-signed. Yeah, it is a great day. It's his final contract he'll do with us.
I also think that Phil did some damage to that relationship and didn't maybe do enough to prevent that divide from growing and growing. I mean, you know, I like Krause is the very easy target. I mean, he really is. Those guys picked on him. Krause was the short little fat guy. He was a very easy target who was always longing for appreciation and adulation. Make sure everybody knows he couldn't just like be quiet and go about his business. He couldn't do that. And it might have served this whole thing better had he been able to do that. But Phil still had a part in driving a divide between those two.
He had an eye for talent. That's what he had. If he couldn't recognize the changing dynamics of the league and where the power was shifting to, then that's on him. Not being able to recognize and understand exactly what the business is about and what direction it's heading, that's on him. Okay, that was on Krause. That's who it was on. And for whatever reason, and I'm a guy that likes to, I want to get rid of a guy a year too early before a year too late.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I'm all for that. I go, when you're not winning championships, when you're not winning and you're not bringing home the hardware, then you might want to go ahead and do something. But if you're winning the hardware, it makes life a little bit more difficult. Now, because of the way the contracts were in 98, it made it a whole lot easier to say goodbye to a whole lot of people. Yeah. And Scottie Pippen wasn't coming back on a one-year deal. I don't care what anybody says.
I don't care what he says. I don't care. He could say 22 years later, no way was Scottie coming back.
He was getting $67 million guaranteed dollars.
There is no way, folks. Don't buy that for one single second.
Danny was reading something. Chris, who was it? Bobby Marks. Bobby Markson.
Yeah, well, 14
well,
mil.
He would have got 14 mil. Yeah. Well, this was 67 guaranteed.
Stop it. There's just no
and
way.
And he's had two surgeries on his back.
There's no
stop.
Right. Right. And he limped through the one game.
Yeah, game.
Heroically.
Game six. Yeah.
Heroically, Carm.
Yeah.
He limped through it. And, you know, so he, even though he knows, he realizes how fragile the whole thing of basketball is, especially when you got a lower back issue. Ask Larry Bird.
Mm-hmm. Good call.
Yeah, so I'm not listen, it came the way it came, and Reinsdorf coming in the 11th hour trying to be some sort of hero. What are you doing? Why? For what? You're not changing anything. If I'm Phil Jackson, work here after this year, after the crap that I got put through by your little short, fat general manager? No way.
But he could have.
Go to hell is what the answer would have been. Go to hell.
He could have sucked it up and said, all right.
Could have, but he said,
give me another 6 mil. Let's run it back.
Nobody does business that way. And if that's the way you want to do business, you're going to be on the bad end before you're on the good end.
That team was not winning.
And the last 20 some odd years of what you've had with the Chicago Bulls, maybe you deserve exactly what you got.
Mm.
Yeah. I do not believe that team would have won.
I don't think they would have either. I mean, it would have looked so dramatically different. And there's a reason nobody's won four in a row since the 1960s. You know, I don't think they would have either. So
we don't know. Maybe that's the beauty of it all. And maybe that's what makes it more special.
Yes, thank you.
It's because we'll never know.
Right. They go out as champions. I prefer to remember them that way.
6-0, baby.
Time to end.
Take that, LeBron.
It was time to end.
Take that. All right, out of here. Back tomorrow morning. We will talk baseball tomorrow. And Bill Barnwell ranking the NFL offseason.
Oh, yeah.
We'll be all over that.
Not good for the Bears.
No. He's obviously not friends with Ryan Pace because, whoa. Anyway, Carm and Yerk are next. It's a Last Dance Money presented by Coors Light. Thanks, Chris, Danny. See you tomorrow.
See what Carmen and Yurko are talking about on Twitch.
Follow ESPN 1000 Chicago today.
This is Carmen and Yurko on ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports.
It's a Last Dance Monday on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN Chicago app and on Twitch. The last one, actually. 5 weeks. Boom. Just like that. It's all brought to you by Coors Light. Get Coors Light at home. You don't even have to leave the couch. Get.coorslight.com. That's get.coorslight.com to find out how. 5 weeks, 10 episodes. We were supposed to wait till this summer to see The Last Dance. When the NBA Finals ended, who knows if we'll even have the NBA Finals in 2020. I'm glad that ESPN did move it up because it did help kind of pass the time. And now it's over, and we're here to react to it. Join Carmen and Yurko today, 312-332-3776, 312-332-ESPN. That's the number. Hit us up on Twitter. Yurko is at Yurko64. That's Yurko with the J. I'm at Carmen DeFalco. And believe it or not, Yurko, I walked away from last night's final episode with a calm that sort of fell over me. And maybe for the first time in the 22 years since it all ended, I was almost truly at peace with everything, as weird as that sounds. Did it bring back some strange memories about what it was like in the late 90s when this whole thing was ending, and why couldn't they come back for another one, and why not keep it going for as long as Michael wanted to play or see if they could win another championship, a seventh and eighth and ninth, who knows? I mean, I thought all that at the time. I've thought all of it in the years since. But I left last night thinking it really was perfect. You know, 6-0. We'll never see them lose in the NBA Finals. We'll never know Michael walking off the floor, getting to the finals as a loser. They never even had to go to a game seven in any of the six finals in which they played. And I just had this sort of strange calm last night when it was all said and done. I don't know where it came from. It sort of caught me off guard. It caught me by surprise. I wasn't angry.
Well, I think it comes with the finality of the series. You know, it comes with the finality. You sit back and you assess and you're like, that was one hell of a run. That was, you know, that was what I remembered. With a little bit more, some more little nuances, some more little stories in there. That's why. I mean, that is why. And as I mentioned in the crosstalk, I think it's better that we never found out they didn't leave as losers, that they left as winners, and that question will always be out there for discussion. Always. And everybody says, no, it would have been so difficult. It would have been terrible. It would have been terrible. It would have been horrible. Sure, it could have been all that, but you still had Michael Jordan. at the helm. You know, playing basketball in a shortened season.
In a short season, which might have helped. Yeah, in a sprint.
In a sprint. But they couldn't wait to break it all up, and that's what ended up happening. Phil was gone. Everybody said, Lakonoch, good to see you, good night. And nobody will ever know whether they could have or they could not won a seventh championship in a four in a row.
Do you really think they couldn't wait to break it up, or was it just time? Like, when Reinsdorf talked about the contract situation and where they weren't going to be able to keep everybody. A significant part of that team was going to have to be dismantled. There's no way Scottie Pippen is sticking around and playing on a one-year deal. Don't buy that for 1 second, any please, people. I mean, if anything, if you learned anything over the last 5 weeks, I mean, don't think whatever anybody says, Scottie or anybody else says right now, that he was going to come back and play on a one-year deal is ridiculous.
If there was going to be a rebuild, it was going to be around Michael.
And
Michael,
correct.
You know, they said it wasn't going to be healthy enough. So, in essence, to hell with everybody else, because Rodman ended up signing like a two-year, $1.8 million deal with the L.A. Lakers after that. Scotty went on his way. Luke went on his way. When was it that Kukoc was on his way?
Kukoc was traded. Kukoc was on the Bulls in 99. Yes, he was. Kukoc was still on the team.
Next year.
And I think the next year is when they moved him to the Sixers. They traded Steve Kerr that year, that summer, you know, when the lockout was happening. And then once they finally came back for that shortened season, he was already gone. I think right before the season started, they ended up trading Steve Kerr to San Antonio. So, yeah, it was going to look a lot different. I mean, everybody was gone. And, I you know, when Phil probably stepped back and assessed it, he probably thought the same thing. Not only did he feel like, hey, the whole season has been about a last dance. You told me I wasn't coming back. You said it 8 months ago that this is it. This was the last dance. We all got together. We read poems to each other. And then we put it in a coffee can and we lit it on fire. And now you want me to come back, and it's going to be who?
Last Dance 2? Everybody knows the sequel's not as good as the first one.
And most of them were going to be gone. And so Phil probably did a quick assessment as great as, look, I know he's got Michael still, but he probably did a quick assessment saying, I don't think so, guys. This ain't going to work.
But Krause would have been storming around the Birdo Center.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And he said, I'll take a year off and wait for the next perfect opportunity. And you know where he found it? In Los Angeles with a young Shaq and a young Kobe. And he said, hey, this looks familiar. I'll go do this and win three more championships. It wasn't going to be easy in 1999 without everybody back. It wasn't going to be. And if we've learned anything about the NBA, look, only three franchises, I guess, the Lakers, once in Minneapolis and once in L.A., only three franchises have ever ripped off three in a row. It's the Bulls, it's the Celtics, of course, and that unbelievable dynasty when the league was totally different, and then the Lakers. You want to talk about when the league was different. The Minneapolis Lakers did it in the 50s, for crying out loud. I mean, okay. And then, of course, they did it again with the three-peat in 2000, 2001, and 2002 with Phil. So it's only happened with three franchises. Nobody's won four in a row since the Celtics. There's a reason. It's damn hard. And you saw by the end of game six, Michael's dragging his ass up and down the floor in Utah thinking, what do I have left? What could I where can I possibly go just to come up with something to make sure we win this game and end it right here and right now? And thankfully for all of us, he did. And again, I sort of walked away last night thinking it really was perfect. I wasn't angry. I expected to be angry. Like, oh my God, how could they do it? How could they break it up? Why did they break it up prematurely? And there was this calm, this peace that came over me and said they really were perfect. Maybe he was listening to the stories about these poems and these letters they were reading to each other. And that was very poetic. And then lighting them on fire. That's like classic Phil. I don't know what it was, but I walked away thinking that was a fun watch. And what a ride it was, and I'm glad it ended the way it did. We never saw them lose. Were you angry? Were you at peace? What are your feelings today after you watched that? 312-332-3776 is the phone number. Oh, it was exhilarating, though, Yurt, wasn't it?
it didn't offer me peace or anything. It was just one hell of a ride. You know, it's like going out on the American Eagle or the Beast down at Kings Island. You sit back, you watch, you enjoy it, and it was 5 weeks, but it's 29 days. Starts on a Sunday, ends in a Sunday. That's why it seems so fast and so quick.
Yeah.
Because one more day than 4 weeks, 29 days. And I enjoyed the ride. Nice ride. You know, every episode was good except for seven, and it was kind of salvaged in the last 15 minutes. But that was fine. I enjoyed it. I thought it was a great ride. They took me in depth into a lot of different areas. Maybe they could have covered some things a little bit better. Maybe I wish that Jordan wasn't the guy that oversaw what the production was like. Maybe we'd have saw some more candor, a little more rawness. You know, maybe some more criticism of Michael.
Sure.
That would have been good. That could have been fun. But overall, I was pretty satiated over the course of time.
Yeah, I hear you there. Although we did get some of it from his teammates, maybe more than we expected, where they admitted that he was difficult to play with. And you heard the word bully a few times. You heard the word tyrant. He was not the most pleasant, you know, teammate to be around. And I think we did get a little snippet of that. We'll take some calls when we come back. We can listen to some of the great sound from episodes 9 and 10. It's all over, folks. It's over, Johnny. 312-332-3776. Ring us up. Tell us what you thought and what were your emotions when it all ended last night. We'll start taking some calls when we come back next on ESPN 1000.
Get Carmen and Yurko pods on the all-new ESPN Chicago app.
You're listening to Carmen and Yurko. This is Chicago's home for sports. ESPN 1000.
The last dance is over. It's a last dance Monday here on ESPN 1000, presented by Coors Light. Your thoughts are welcome. Join Carmen and Yurko today as we discuss. Let's go to Eddie on the north side. What's up, Eddie? Eddie, going once, going twice. Eddie's gone. How about Chris on the south side? What's up, Chris?
Fellas, how you doing this afternoon?
What's up, buddy?
Good.
I'm glad to hear you're healthy. So basically, I felt really empty, but it was like a good empty. You know how you got to leave the crowd wanting more? So, like, I wanted more. I wanted more. And luckily, ESPN is showing Game 6 with some commentary from The Last Dance, so I get a little bit more.
That's nice. So you wanted more. You just want a little bit more kind of still going down memory lane with the good times in the 90s. Or are you saying you wanted more like, hey, another run for a title in 99?
Well, both. And I definitely think Pip should have got a little bit more attention in 93-94. Basketball was great still in 93-94, and Pip should have got a little bit more positive attention.
Listen, Pip didn't come off looking great in this whole thing, Chris. Thanks. We've sort of talked about that. I still really, really like Scottie Pippen. He's easily my second favorite Bulls player of all time. I mean, I love Scottie. I do. And from everything I've always been able to gather, I've said this a million times, he was a tremendous teammate. Absolutely tremendous. Was he flawed? Yes. None of us are perfect, obviously. None of us are perfect employees. None of us are perfect people. None of us are
human beings.
Right? Yeah. I mean, none of us are perfect friends. None of our jobs are perfect. None of our kids are perfect. Like, none of it. Nothing is perfect. It's funny. I was just saying, too, like, I'm glad that they ended as a perfect 6-0. Like, maybe that's the closest we ever get. We never saw Michael walk off. We never saw Scottie or Phil walk off that floor in the finals. Losing one of those series against some unbelievable teams, against Hall of Fame players. I saw one of the stats last night, in going in and out of the commercials, they've been playing sort of like a quick trivia game. By the way, give us a few more seconds for the trivia, guys. I mean, they put up a trivia question, and then the answer's up there 2.5 seconds later. It's like, geez, I mean, yeah. Let us think about it. But they beat more I saw that they beat more 60-win teams. Like, they eliminated more 60-win teams, Yurk, than any other franchise has in postseason history. Michael and Scottie, they eliminated seven different 60-win teams, I think the stat was.
Here's the one thing I didn't like about the whole thing, and they really kind of reiterated it last night, was that Michael dragged people across the finish line. You know, everybody that was on that team was a professional. They were in shape. You know, they were studious. They understood game plans. You know, nobody had to be dragged anywhere. They were led. If they were led by somebody, they were led by Michael, that's for sure. They were led. But to say people were dragged places, I think that's a little bit over the top. And if it's the one criticism I have of the whole thing, is I think that was just a little bit over the top.
So
he was a motivator. He was a leader. He kept and held everybody accountable, which was great. But a lot of these guys were holding themselves accountable anyway. So, you know, to say that people were dragged anywhere, to me is a little bit ridiculous.
So would you like eliminate that particular piece of vernacular maybe from like the sports lexicon? Because we do say that a lot. Like we look at guys like, oh, LeBron dragged a team to the finals, or you know, like as a pro athlete, should we not be saying that? Is that a misrepresentation of what's really
for
happening?
For me, specifically in this whole thing, that's the only thing. If I would have changed, I would have changed that.
All right.
There's no dragging going on. These guys were professionals. You know, they were part of the best 0.1% in all the land to play in the NBA. So I would just disagree with that. And the second thing I disagree with, everybody who, you know, Steve Kerr likes to talk politics every once in a while. And they said, well, if anybody, after what happened to him, what his father in the Middle East when he was in Beirut in the American University out there. And they said, well, nobody should ever tell Steve Kerr to ever be quiet when it comes to politics. Well, hold on here. My father was a machinist, okay? I don't know a darn thing about machinery or being a machinist. I have no idea. You know, his father was an educator and an expert on the Middle East. Just because the father and the educator are experts on the Middle East doesn't make him a master of the Middle East and or politics. Okay? He is who he is, and he's a professional at what he did. Now he's a professional basketball coach. Then he was a professional basketball player. And whatever he studied at the University of Arizona is what he studied at the University of Arizona. But that doesn't make him an expert in Middle Eastern politics because his father passed away. I'm sorry. That's not the way it works.
Has anybody said he's an expert in Middle Eastern politics, though?
No, but people are saying, well, if he wants to offer his opinion on whatever he wants to offer his opinion on when it comes to politics, everybody should just shut the hell up and leave him alone.
Well, I think anybody in this country that wants to offer up an opinion on politics can offer
up an opinion on politics. They can, but they could also be told to shut the hell up, too.
Well, sure.
Okay. Well, the point was last night on Twitter that nobody can – he's above reproach, and he can say what he wants, and nobody should ever question him.
I was not aware.
If anything
– Well, if Twitter says it.
Carmen, listen. Well, trust me, where idiots go to play. If anything, we should question everything all the time.
All the time. Amen to that, brother.
Question everything all the time. No matter what side. Remember that. No matter what side, right. Question it all the time.
Question authority all the time. Didn't we learn anything from our forefathers, Jericho?
We should always. They were skeptics.
That's right.
They were always skeptics, kid.
Of course.
Real quickly, two things. So you don't think if that team, not even arguing if Pip would have signed him, if that team comes back in full, okay, for one more year.
What's in full? There's nobody back. I mean, Kerr would have been gone. Pip would have been gone.
Okay, no, I'm saying if Jordan convinces Pip to come back.
There's no way, Murph.
Just follow along.
You want to play fantasy?
Yes. If they come back, you don't think they could have made it at least to the finals?
I don't know.
The Knicks were the eighth seed, and they made it to the finals.
That's right. The Knicks were
the
eighth
seed. Hold on, guys. Hold on real quick. Carmen Electra's at the front door. If we're playing fantasy, she's at the front door. I got to go answer it.
Yeah, again, no
kidding. She's coming in, too. Rodman was already tired of it all, right? Was Rodman tired of it all or not?
I mean, probably. Yeah, it's only 50 games.
He was 37 years old. He couldn't maintain his level of excellence wherever he went next anyway.
Yeah, I think if you're playing the what-if game, you replace Rodman with someone else who's a free agent. I know some of the names that were out there were like Antonio McDice.
Yeah.
He was a player that was out there. You know, Charles Barkley was a free agent that summer as well. There's rumors that he would have been interested in coming to Chicago. I know he wasn't an MVP still, but he was still a capable player to give you some minutes. I'm sure Chuck would be a better replacement than Rodman.
When did Chuck break down? Was it that year or the year after?
I mean, I'm trying to remember that year, that 99 year when they were together in Houston. Remember, it was Chuck and it was Pip. Was Olajuwon still there?
I think Olajuwon was still there.
You know, and they were one of the first big threes, right? And they weren't that good. And Pippen was gone the next year.
In 99, Barkley played 36 minutes a night, averaged 16 points, 12 rebounds, 5 assists per game for the Rockets.
Still pretty good. But
Olajuwon was there, too.
Yeah. Olajuwon was still there, yeah. Kind of a far cry from, you know, Barkley's dominance, obviously. They were all getting more towards the end of their
careers. But that's still better than Dennis Rodman.
Yeah, I mean, sure. Had he come here? I mean, to play the what-if game, would it have been Michael, Scotty, and Charles? Yeah, I think they probably would have done pretty well. I do. But I also think there's something real about, after each three-peat, Michael and all those guys being genuinely spent. The amount of physical and emotional, mental energy that you need to expend to achieve something like that, I don't think most of us can begin to comprehend. And I don't know that there was anything left in the tank. And then Michael's goofing around on the golf course, and whatever happens to the finger happens to the finger or his thumb. I mean, who the hell knows? And now I guess you'd say, well, he wouldn't have been golfing. He wouldn't have been goofing around maybe, but there's still the potential for a lockout. The season could have been short, and Michael could have been golfing in the Bahamas or wherever he was, snipped his finger. He didn't even come back. Let's not forget about that hole. Are we saying, is part of the what-if game that Michael never hurts his finger? He couldn't even play that year.
I bet you, if you ask our fans right now.
Would they win? That's a
yes.
Well, go ahead.
Yeah.
But do a wet pull.
312-332-3776. I bet you the majority say yes. The Bulls would have come back and won their fourth in a row.
Yeah, but I think the emotion gets the better of people there. All right, would they have won a fourth straight? 312-332-ESPN is the number. What are your overriding emotions after watching these last 5 weeks, these 10 episodes? Back out to the phones coming up. 312-332-3776 is the number, and we'll do some trending in just a little bit.
ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports.
Bring Carmen and Yurko with you at home or in your office. Just tell your smart speaker to play ESPN 1000.
Live on Twitch, twitch.tv. Search ESPN 1000 Chicago. It's Carmen and Yurko. Let's go to Kevin in Warrenville. What's going on, Kevin?
Hey, what's up, guys? Hey, like Merkin just said, the following season is only 50 games, so I think that their chances were still there. They may have not have been as high, and then, like, yeah, you throw in the finger injury and all that, so, you know, that might hurt their chances, but I still think they had a chance. And also, why does Jerry Reinsdorf get a pass on everything? You know, Kraus worked for him, and Kraus is disrupting the chemistry of the team by saying the things in the media that he was saying. At what point do you call him in your office and you tell him to settle down and that he works for you and that you technically have final say on everything because you're the owner? I think Reinsdorf is almost as guilty as Kraus, and he almost used Kraus as a scapegoat, I felt like, because I think Reinsdorf really wanted to be over with too. Now, at the end, he said that he offered Phil another year, whatever that, but that was after the damage was done.
Yeah.
And so I think Reinsdorf keeps getting a pass when he shouldn't.
All right, Kevin, thanks. I mean, I don't think Jerry gets a pass. I think Jerry Reinsdorf gets beat up plenty. I think he has over the years. But Kevin made the point that Yurko was making during Crosstalk that does it really matter that Jerry called, you know, in July, Phil, and said, hey, how about one more go around? The damage had been done. That you can't argue with.
Kraus had poisoned the waters.
Yes. Tremendously. Now, Phil maybe shared in some of the animosity between the two. It wasn't all one-sided, believe me. Phil
pointed it out. The dynamics of the league at that point were the general manager was going to get paid as much as the head coach.
Yeah.
Head coach is making $5 million. Jerry Krause is making $550. A little bit of a difference.
And the players were starting to get more control at that point.
Yes,
you know, think about it. It was a changing landscape, Eric. You're right.
Right. And he was not unwilling. Maybe he was incapable of making changes. Kraus was. But, of course, Reinsdorf used him as insulation.
Yes.
Of course. He made Jerry to be the guy that had to go do all the bad work.
Jerry,
things didn't get done if Reinsdorf didn't approve it, guys.
Right. Of course not. They still don't. Jerry Kraus, I think, felt like Phil Jackson owed him something for life. That's what I think. And that is a mistake, Yurk. And that's part of why there was just part of Jerry's insecurities. That in Jerry's mind, in Jerry Krause's mind, he discovered Phil when nobody in the league, and Phil knew a lot of people. Let's not forget, Phil was a good player, a championship player in a big market in this league. When none of his former associates, coaches, teammates, whatever. When nobody wanted to give Phil a job, and he was coaching, where was he coaching? At some Puerto Rican league, right? And then he's coaching in the CBA.
Yep.
When nobody wanted to give Phil Jackson a job, Jerry Kraus did. He saw something in Phil, something potentially magical. And I think in his mind, he felt like Phil always owed him something. And that was one of his mistakes. And Phil got to a point where he probably thought, I don't owe you anything. I've proven myself now in this league. Michael Jordan loves me. Michael Jordan is on record saying he ain't playing for any other coach. Guess the kind of power that puts in Phil Jackson's court. And I'm not saying that wasn't earned by Phil. Of course it was. Phil could coach. Was he the most brilliant X's and O's guy? No, but he didn't have to be. Phil had other strengths. He had the X's and O's guys he needed. He knew how to surround himself with good people. He believed in Tex Winter. He believed in Johnny Bach. He had the X's and O's guys. All Phil had to do was be Phil, be the Zen master. And he was quite good at that. Let's be honest. He was superb. And the guys bought in. And so when the players are in Phil's corner, I think in Phil's mind, he got to the point where saying, what do I still owe you? But Jerry had this desire, I think, to always be proving to everybody how valuable he was to the organization, that he could do it with or without Michael, without Scotty, and that Phil should forever be indebted to him because he found Phil, and that's a dangerous way to operate.
Well, that 2001 draft was a killer then for him.
It was a killer, Yerk.
Yeah.
The 2000 and 2001 drafts. And coming up, because I'm glad you actually said that, Yerk. I want to get into that just after 1 o'clock about all the missteps in the rebuild.
After that.
After
yes.
that. Because you want to rebuild. You believe in yourself. You're supremely confident. Okay. Now go out and do it. And we'll take you through some of the things that were truly the undoing of Jerry Krause. And maybe still to this day, quite frankly, the Bulls as an organization. I mean, they fielded some competitive teams, but it's not as easy as everybody thinks. And I think Jerry Krause, 5 years later, learned that the hard way. Now, would he do it all over again? I don't know. He probably really wanted that opportunity to prove to the world that he could do it post-Michael. But there were a lot of things coming together by the end of that 98 season that we now see that made it a situation that it just was never going to happen where they were all going to come back. Too much had been said. Too much damage had been done. Too many guys were starting to break down. Too many guys were getting old. Rodman's off-the-court antics were probably getting to the point where they felt like it was going to really be the end of his career. All this stuff was working against them by the end of 1998. Tracy's in Naperville. What's up, Tracy?
Yes, calling to make a comment on the Mike Jordan documentary. Mike is the best player, but if he had to go up against the guys like ML Carr on a constant basis like they did back then, would he have been the same player? You can comment on that. I'll hang up.
Would he have been the same if he had to go up against ML Carr? I mean, Tracy's obviously going to the old school.
Yes.
It's hard to compare these eras. I don't know what
else
to say.
They didn't play a lot of defense in the 70s, guys.
No, and they played a lot more in the 90s. Do you see the scores? Do people remember the scores of some of these games? They were like 83-80. This is with Michael Jordan, like the greatest scorer in the history of the game. Right. The game, and I know people don't always like the way the game's played today. Yurko kind of prefers the old school. I loved basketball back then. I just like basketball a lot. I mean, I can appreciate some of the things about that era. But what I like about today's game is that it is fast. I like scoring. I'm sorry. I like threes. I like that these guys are up and down the court. And things always tighten up a little bit in the playoffs. But the Bulls were winning playoff games like 79-75.
96-52 in that one game.
Well, that was
94-52.
Yeah, it was.
That was a unique beauty.
96-52, I think, or 54. 96-54. Yeah.
ML Carr played from 75 until 85.
Yeah,
that's what we got out of ML Carr. 6'6", 205. So he's a big fella, and I'm sure they played a physical brand of basketball. His best year was 78-79, 18.7 points a game, 2.5 steals a game. He led the NBA in that stat. Steals a game. About that, Carr.
Good for ML Carr. Was ML Carr?
He was playing some defense.
I mean, he was on the 76 Boston team that won, obviously.
No,
was he a coach?
He was in the ABA.
Oh, he was?
Yeah, it looks like St. Louis is where he was at. Then he went to Detroit.
But ML Carr had to coach a couple of those early Boston teams in the 80s, right? He must have. When they won a couple of those titles in the 80s.
I don't think ML Carr was ever a coach. I think it was Casey Jones was the coach.
I thought ML was for a year. Casey Jones definitely was. But I thought ML was for one of those teams. Wasn't he, Merck?
Yeah, ML played for the Spirits of St. Louis in 75-76.
ML Carr was a coach in the 90s for the Celtics.
Oh, okay, so it was after. So it must have been Casey then. All right, good call, Merck.
96-97.
There you go. I remember ML Carr at some point coached Boston. Do I have time for Bob in Buffalo Grove? Go ahead, Bob.
Hey, real quick, getting back to your quick question, instead of having 4 in a row, I would have rather had Michael not retire or whatever happened and had 8 in a row.
Oh, so like just that they would have kept going in the mid-90s is what Bob is saying.
Right.
To me, that's an impossibility.
All right, so listen, if that ended up happening with the way he looked in 93 after that, maybe you give 2 more, but then at some point it starts to fall apart, does it not?
I think so.
Right. I think that's what
end up with six, right, Yerk?
It happened the way it happened.
Yes.
You got 6 of 8, and one, he came back for a partial year. He was gone for a year and change. He was there for a partial year, but he wasn't in the kind of shape to be able to play basketball because he had changed his body. Came back, had a full season in 95-96. They won it, they won it, they won it, and that's the way it ends up finishing. Boy, I wish they could have gone after it, you know, and finished out the decade, 99. Won in 91 and won 96, 7, 8, 9. That would have been that would have been fun. It would have been joyous. But unfortunately, over the course of time, things were put out there and many obstacles for the Chicago Bulls, their coaches, their players, because of what the front office did. Missteps in the front office.
Yep. This hour has been brought to you by the Home Loan Expert. The housing market is about to really take off. Get pre-approved for your new home in 5 minutes at thehomeloanexpert.com. And coming up next, we'll talk about some of those missteps and why Jerry Krause, even though he had won 6 rings at that point, had this burning desire to prove to everybody that he could do it again. We'll take some more calls when we come back, and we're back in just 2 minutes.